That's kind of the essence of the free agent model, if you will. So, you know, I always tell people that if we're talking about a contractual engagement, the goal of any free agent or interim executive for that matter is really to work themselves out of a job. You know, you don't want somebody who's there for 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 years. Candidly, if they're doing that, then I feel like they're just kind of skating through underneath the radar. But their goal should be to come in, maximize value, maximize ROI, kind of lead them to water, if you will, but then ultimately get out of the way, teach them how to kind of fish, and then move on to the next engagement.
Welcome to the Your Living Brand Live Show. This show is all about how you communicate your value, how you build influence through trust, and recognizing who your audience is and who they are not. Through our weekly conversations with our guests, we will explore different ways to enable you to demonstrate your uniqueness. While we ask them, what's your story? And now, welcome our host, Ben Baker.
Welcome to another episode of the Your Living Brand Live Show. Welcome back, my wonderful audience. And thank you for coming back week after week. Thank you for sharing. Thank you for commenting on LinkedIn. And thank you for emailing me at ben@yourbrandmarketing.com. I love your comments. I love your passion. I love the fact that you come back week after week. So thank you, my wonderful audience. This week, we are going to talk about innovative ways at looking at recruiting. I mean, recruiting is changing. It should change. It needs to change. And I brought a really great guest of Bo Billington from The Free Agent. And we're going to talk about what do we need to do to be innovative in the way that we recruit and be able to put ourselves in the best shape forward moving forward. So, Bo, welcome to the show.
Ben, super glad to be here. Thanks for having me on. And yes, the world of recruiting is crazy. I've been in the business for 5 years and I have seen it change from when I first started until this point. So super glad to be here. Interesting topic, of course, it's near and dear. And thanks for having me on.
Oh, my pleasure. So what brought you into the recruiting world? I mean, you've been in it for 5 years, which doesn't seem like a long period of time, but it really is when we take a look at how the industry has progressed and, you know, how digital it's become and how innovative it has become and how disruptive it, as much as I hate the word disruptive, everybody knows I hate the word disruptive, but as it's changed, what brought you into the industry? And then let's talk about where we are today.
Sure. So great question. And I will say the fact that I've only been in the industry and didn't come from the industry, you know, if it's been 5 years, I feel like that's actually my superpower. So I feel like kind of my organization, my company comes in and we look at kind of recruiting from a completely different perspective with the total goal of actually aiming to like disrupt the industry, which has been primed for disruption for the last 20, 30 years. In regards to your question on how I got started, prior to jumping out, I was in corporate America, software sales and services for a better part of 16, 17 years, selling to the Fortune 50, typically working for international companies, got totally burnt out with the travel, had a kid, built a house, and wanted to kind of find a different reality for me. And I know you're Canadian, and so you can probably resonate with this, but I just had my first daughter. I was in Toronto about 3-4 days before Christmas. Snowed in. Looked like I was going to be snowed in and not make it back. And I was only in Toronto because somebody told me to be there. So I was sitting there at the restaurant and in the background, ESPN came on and said, so-and-so is a free agent. And I thought to myself, how cool is that? Why can't I myself be a free agent? Essentially work for 3-4 companies over the course of the year, work on my terms, and ultimately kind of jump out of corporate America. So that spawned kind of the concept of the free agent. Now it took me 2 to 3 years while working in corporate America to really kind of suss out what we do, how we do it. And then upon kind of garnering that confidence and also realizing that I could never really have a side hustle alongside a main hustle, you know, I made the hard decision April of, I guess, 2017 and jumped out. And then now 5 years later, I'm here talking to you.
That's awesome. I mean, I'm with you 100%. I love the free agent mentality. I've been on my own one way, shape or form for 25 years now. Mm-hmm. But truly what we are in a lot of cases is we're advocates for our clients. We go in there and we dig deep. So we're sitting there on a fractional communication officer type position where we're sitting there going, okay, how do you work internally and really be there side by side instead of just being this vendor that comes in, charges them a lot of money, gives them a report and then walks away. So I get it. Being part of 3 or 4 or 5 different organizations, seeing a breadth of situations, seeing what's really going out of the market makes you more valuable to the other 4 because you're going to see things in one place that you can utilize in a different location. So I love the fractional model. I believe in it. I think it's the way it should be in terms of a lot of businesses.
Well, just to kind of add on to what you just mentioned, I mean, what I've really enjoyed about my own is that I feel I'm really in a position and that I'm empowered to provide real value to my customers, right? So when I worked for other companies, a lot of the times they look for a customer to fit perfectly within this box. And anything outside of the box, oh, we don't do that, pass to a partner, even though maybe it was quasi-tangential to what we did and we could service them in theory. And so I really had a problem with that because I like to get creative. I like to sit down with my customers and figure out a way to help them kind of fix their gaps, fix their issues. And now that I'm a free agent and I have my own business, I am in a position of course, I feel to provide more value and really kind of hold the hands of my customers and see how we can help them versus just kind of saying, hey, we don't do that. Sorry. Good luck. Find somebody else.
Well, it's being a problem solver. And that I think is what everybody needs today. People need people who can help them solve problems, not solve the problems for them, but people who can actually come in and teach them how to fish instead of fishing for them. And I think that that's really an important thing to sit there and say, look, tell you what, I'm going to show you how to hold the reel. I'm going to show you how to cast. I'm going to show you how to pull the fish in, and I'll do it for you a couple times. But after that, I'm just going to pull back a little bit and I'm going to watch you and I'm going to coach you a little bit. Then I'm going to walk away. And if you have problems, I'm still going to be here. But it's all about teaching other people how to succeed. I love that thought process.
No, totally. And that's kind of the essence of kind of the free agent model, if you will. So, you know, I always tell people that if we're talking about a contractual engagement, the goal of any free agent or interim executive for that matter is really to work themselves out of a job. You don't want somebody who's there for 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 years. Candidly, if they're doing that, then I feel like they're just kind of skating through underneath the radar. But their goal should be to come in, maximize value, maximize ROI, kind of lead them to water, if you will, but then ultimately get out of the way, teach them how to kind of fish, and then move on to the next engagement.
And on that front, you could also be the person who comes in, it can make the mess, clean it up, and then hand it off to somebody else. Because the person that comes in when it is messy, when there's real chaos going on, when there's real change needed to be in, is not usually the person that's going to be loved all the time.
Right.
They're not always going to be the person that everybody's best friend because they got to make the hard decisions to be able to make sure that things are successful moving forward. So a lot of times these fractional people are great because you can bring them in, let them do what they do best, which is make sense out of the chaos.
Right.
Move everything in the right direction and then be able to say, look, you now need somebody who can sit there and manage everything that we put forward. That's not me. That's not my skill set. My skill set is to make chaos, then clean it up and hand it off. So it's being able to understand what are the skill set of the people that you're bringing in
right.
and making sure that they're successful and you're successful at the same time.
Yeah, agreed. I think the beauty of the interim, you know, management consultant, if you will, is the fact that they're an objective advisor, observer, whatever you want to call it. But a lot of times when people within their own organizations are trying to, I guess, fix something that's broken, it's generally a myopic view, similar to how developers don't work on their own code. They bring in a separate party, i.e. QA, to really kind of evaluate the software that's built. And I'm a big believer in the management consulting model because you are bringing in an outside resource that may know your business, may not know your business, may know the industry, may not, et cetera. But ultimately, they're independent and their goal is to fix the problem versus to play politics or whatever scenario may happen within kind of a medium to large size company.
Let's get into something you just said. It says, maybe they know your business, maybe they don't know your business. I'm finding that there's a lot of companies out there saying, I want somebody who's done 10 years of experience doing this specific exact thing for this specific type of company yeah. before I'm willing to bring it in. And I think that's very myopic. I'd love to hear your viewpoints on that.
Great point. I think it depends on the actual situation. I mean, there are some industries that are so niche. The nuances are so great that bringing somebody from, I guess, an insider, if you will, does make sense. I talked to it was an architectural software firm a couple of weeks ago, where obviously that's a very, very specific product.
Sure.
But there's other scenarios where I feel maybe the industry is broader in nature and could leverage executive that has experience in an adjacent market set. So I think it really depends on the exact scenario and also to what type of discipline you're hiring for. Is it sales? Is it operations? Is it finance, technology, et cetera? You know, if you're thinking more of kind of the finance and operations silo, sometimes numbers are numbers, sometimes they're not, right? If you're talking sales, then sometimes I believe, in my opinion, a lot of times coming from the same industry does make some sense, or at least an adjacent industry.
And that's the thing, is to sit there and say, does the person have the skill set to learn?
Right. You know,
I always find that being curious as that outside voice coming in is probably the biggest superpower you have. sometimes the fact that you don't know that you don't know, and you're being the one who's willing to ask the questions, the hard questions that everybody else assumes everybody knows the answer to, opens up conversations that no one else was willing to have. So it's a matter of sitting there going, how open are companies to change? Or are they just looking for someone who can manage the chaos as it's going out? So it's a matter of sitting there going, okay, what are we trying to achieve?
So I totally agree. I think having an innate curiosity is a big, big, big component to what makes an executive consultant successful or not. Also, too, having the enough panache to have an executive team that actually listens to you, which kind of takes further into a point regarding soft skills. At some point, sometimes, I guess, experience is at parity across these executives. You know, they've all managed big teams, done this, done that. But part of our goal and our job actually is to make sure that the soft skills these individuals possess integrate well with the executive team. And that's a big, big component, because if obviously if that's not aligned or misaligned, then you're dead from go.
Well, it is. It's understanding the culture. You got to understand what's the situation you're walking into. What are the politics? Who are the personalities involved? What are the real problems? What are the underlying problems?
Which is so tough, because most people talk about their businesses as, yes, everything's great. Everything's perfect. We don't have any issues. And then I always ask, well, why are we talking?
Exactly.
It's tough to kind of get to that next level of what the real underlying issues are. And candidly, if I never get to that point with a company, I'm not going to work with them. That's not a knock on them, but I wouldn't be effective at my job if everything is perfect, it's all rosy, and we're unable to really talk about where the bodies are buried. I mean, that's what we really needed to discuss. They need to be vulnerable. Similarly, too, if we're talking about attracting talent, I know we're going to circle back to this. If companies aren't honest as well with the talent, they're not going to attract the folks they want. And so we really need to be in a position that where we can understand the company, they're vulnerable, they're transparent, not only with us, but also the folks that we bring to the table. Because otherwise, you're not going to attract the caliber of individuals that are going to help you get to that next level.
That's a great transition, because I wanted to bring up two things. One, at the very beginning, you talked about that over the 5 years that you've been in the business, you've seen dramatic change. And I want to get into that. But the second part that I want to get into once we've discussed that is, okay, so what is the process that we need to be able to look at moving forward in a good economy, in a bad economy? What are the things that we need to be thinking about when we're going through the hiring process? Because as things change, what are the things that are going to be important moving forward? What are the things that have been important in the past that are no longer apply, et cetera? So let's get into the first thing, and then we can circle back to that.
Sure. So in regards to your first question about how things have changed, so over the last 5 years, it's been a roller coaster, honestly. So when I first started, I feel like salary brackets, salary bands were pretty much at parity. You know precisely, you know, what job would equate to what salary or what hourly rate. And for the record, we do both executive headhunting as well as interim or fractional consulting work, right? So we kind of see both sides of the coin there, but had a very, very good feeling as to kind of salary brackets. It was more around kind of overall opportunity, but because salaries were at parity, right? And so you really kind of had to suss out with the organizations and the companies where they differentiated in areas outside of salary. And again, not necessarily an easy job, but the salary component was stagnant. And so you kind of had to do your due diligence with the company and really just come to the table armed with just some interesting points about what they do, how they do it, and why somebody would want to work there. And then COVID struck, of course. And I think I was a year and a half or 2 years in. And if I made it through that, I would make it through anything then. So that was actually a good time for me. But COVID struck, and that really put everybody into a frenzy and a tailspin. I saw a lot of the executive, well, not the executive, but kind of the director and above, hiring decrease a little bit and the need for interim executives increase substantially. So right. We have a goal of 50-50 split. And we went from, I'd say 70-30 at the time of headhunting to contract work to probably about 20-80 split.
So the fractional stuff went way up.
Went way up because nobody was hiring. It was all around conserving revenue or increasing revenue and cutting costs. So getting rid of nice to have roles and ensuring that whomever was brought on could really move the cursor in a big way. And so having access to interim folks made a lot of sense. And then about 2 years into that, I think everybody realized that COVID was not going away and companies went into a hiring frenzy, and which has completely obliterated the market. It's really made my job a lot harder because, you know, previously salaries were, again, pretty stagnant. But once everyone realized COVID was not going away or ending anytime soon, salaries went through the roof. I'm talking 20, 30, 40, 50%. And so you found this void where these big companies, these big organizations were able to attract talent strictly by the monetary value, strictly by dollars. And then you had this bigger void with these middle tier companies that couldn't compete from a salary perspective. And so it made it quite difficult to find personnel within that middle tier bracket that was unable to get that 20, 30, 40% salary lift. That led us into a situation where you really had to do some due diligence in regards to what you can bring to the table. Is it equity? Is it options? Maybe find somebody who's a little bit more junior and give them a little bit more of a senior role in order to attract them, because you couldn't compete against cost. So it's really kind of, we've really been through the ringer, and I'm not hoping for a recession, but I'm thinking maybe the recession can kind of bring us back to where we were a little
right-sided, get it right-sided a little bit.
Yeah, hopefully so. I mean, obviously, again, I'm not looking for a recession because that's bad for my business. It's bad for everybody's business, but it may kind of bring the market back to where it needs to be, because it's just been kind of the wild, wild west. And again, everybody's chasing dollars, which is great. But a lot of times these people who are chasing dollars are the ones who are getting laid off now.
Hi, everyone. Do you want to be your best customer's vendor of choice? Do you want to cement relationships with them, add real value, and gain insights that your competitors just can't get? Go to podcasthostforhire.com. That's podcasthostforhire.com. And let's work together to make you the value vendor of choice.
Challenges with chasing dollars and titles. And I look at it and I do a lot of coaching. And I tell these kids, it says, look, it says, if all you're doing is getting a title, if all you're doing is title bump and you're not getting compensated effectively for what you're doing, all it is a title and it doesn't really mean anything. And if all you're doing is chasing money, you're going to be working like a dog forever. You need to sit there and understand, how am I being compensated? How am I being valued? And Sure. Is it all about money? No, maybe it's about looking at different ways that we compensate individuals beyond money. I was talking to somebody the other day. It says, what if once a week you hired somebody to go in and clean somebody's apartment for them, or you had groceries delivered to their place, or they didn't want to drive, so you had an Uber show up every morning and take them to the office and back?
I need somebody to fold my clothes, Ben, but I love that idea. That's a great idea. Low cost to the company, but adds a lot of value to the worker.
Exactly. Because it's different ways of looking at it, going instead of that $30, $50, $100,000 bump, you look at something that's $20,000 and has $75,000 or $80,000 worth of value. And I think that there's a lot of people that sit there and go, wait a second here. I'm time starved. I don't have time to do my laundry. I don't have time so I can bring my laundry to the office and somebody will take care of it for me once a week. Somebody will come and clean my house. Somebody will bring groceries to my house. Somebody will drive me back and forth to the office, whatever. Figure it out. And it can't be an all or nothing type thing. It's got to be sitting there talking to individual people and sit there going, what's going to work for you?
Well, this goes back to the point I made a few moments ago about trying to find those added areas where companies compete outside of dollars. So helping people kind of have more fulfillment in their work, maybe a better work-life balance. When I first started my career, it was all around money. And then I think it was like 30, 33, 34, where I realized, hey, it's not all about money. I actually have a life. Mm-hmm. And I want to be around my kids. So quality of life then became supreme. And so I'm obviously, you know, have my own business, but if I were looking for a company currently, of course, I'd have specific salary that I would need to maintain. But outside of that, what would really be interesting to me is, can I take my kids to a soccer game or baseball game or to practice every week and not miss one and not feel guilty about it and not get a call from my boss when he or she knows that I'm going to be with my children?
Exactly. So let's talk about good economy versus bad economy. And how you would advise, you know, corporations in their hiring process in both, because sometimes we're going to have good economies, sometimes we're going to have bad economies. It's sitting there going, all right, how do you change your philosophy, or do you change your philosophy in terms of how you go to market and the type of things that you're offering and the relationships that you're trying to build with your staff, whether it's a good economy or a bad economy, or should it be the same thing?
Sure. I'm going to kind of attack this from a little bit of a different angle, but you know, what I've seen in a good economy, a lot of companies are hiring full-time employees, which makes sense. Business is booming. If you have the cash and capital, why not do that? Conversely, when I've seen the economy kind of tank or things like COVID have presented themselves, I've seen companies hire less full-time employees and really ratchet up the consulting side of the house, which makes a lot of sense from a myriad of different reasons. You can spend money, but maybe kind of maximize the output. So it really kind of depends on the company and the situation. And also too, being really in tune with what's going on. Right. Because so I've seen, you know, recently a lot of companies have gotten funding round in the last 6, 8 months. And then now in the last month, they're laying off all those people that they just hired. Right. And that's just kind of a bad situation where I feel like they weren't honest. At some point, there was a trigger that they saw and they were unable to, they didn't want to slow down the hiring or make some harder decisions earlier. That being said, good economy, bad economy, the landscape has changed and attracting talent has never been harder, in my opinion. And so companies need to do a much better job of increasing the candidate experience, how they treat a candidate, how they treat a consultant. That really matters. And candidly, a lot of their reputation is tied to that. You go to websites like Glassdoor, et cetera, where you can see the actual ranking of companies. People look at that. Like people really look at that. And so if a company is not looking at their actual digital footprint and how they're portrayed kind of in the world in regards to how they treat candidates or even employees, then that's a missed opportunity for them really to kind of ratchet up the way to recruit.
So let's get beyond the recruiting to the letter signing. And what I've always told companies is, and it doesn't matter the size of the company I work with, most companies do a horrific job on onboarding people.
Yes.
They really do. They do a horrible job at onboarding. And my point is, if you don't onboard people properly, they have 1 foot out the door before they have 2 feet in, and they're already out there looking. So my question to you is, how do you advise future employers of how to be able to onboard people more effectively, to be able to make sure that you bring them into the culture, you bring them into the team, and make them feel warm and welcome and valued from day one?
Great question. I totally agree. I think we've all been in that situation where you're in a new role for maybe it's 30 days, 60 days, or 90 days, and you already see the red flags. Maybe you didn't get your computer the first week, maybe the onboarding from just a sheer ramp-up perspective, learning the processes, et cetera, is hard. But that is really something that companies need to batten down the hatches. Unfortunately, I'm not the right person to have that conversation. I think that's more going to be somebody that's directly in HR. But the beauty is that there's companies that are like mine that do have interim HR folks that really kind of could speak to the onboarding process and help companies optimize that. Because similar to kind of the recruiting side of the house, that's one component. That's kind of like the first stage. Whereas the second stage is literally bringing them through your process and ensuring that they're ramped up, they're ready to go, they feel appreciated, they're listened to, they get their computer, and they can ultimately become productive quickly. That's the goal. But yeah, unfortunately, I'm not an expert as it pertains to that side of the house.
So let's back it up then, and let's talk about honesty in recruiting.
Yes.
Warts and all. I mean, there are companies out there, whether it's in their advertising in the newspaper on Indeed or ZipRecruiter or wherever it is, to the interviews and whatever, that are putting on this big shiny veneer. It's like the first date. You never tell a woman on your first date that you were actually in jail for 6 months. But you sit there and look at it going, where do you open up the kimono and right. let people actually have an understanding of, listen, this is what we do well. This right. is what we don't do well. This is what you can expect. This is what you can't expect. Because if those expectations don't actually meet what reality, you're out there having to recruit all over again.
100%. And I've learned that the hard way, right? I mean, not all good business not all business is good business, right? And a lot of companies out there are selling a bad bill of goods. So ultimately, that's what they're taught. Hey, everything's great. We have the best culture in the world. Most of the times, the companies that kind of have that approach typically have bad cultures, and somebody's gonna be a flight risk that as soon as they start. And so one of the ways that I've learned to mitigate that is I don't work with companies where it's all roses and puppy dogs, right? So that means that I'm not getting transparency from the leader. Additionally, I don't work with companies where I don't have direct access to the leadership team, be it the CEO or whomever's hiring. And I need to spend at least 30 minutes to an hour with each individual that's involved in the hiring process, just so I can really get kind of a 360-degree view of the company, what they do well, what they don't do well. And I'll tell you this, the higher you go up in the food chain, the more the BS meter goes off. When you're talking to an executive and you're trying to recruit somebody who's going to be the next CXO, whatever that title will be, and you don't have anything bad to say about the company, no gaps. I mean, the chance of that person taking the job if they're an astute executive are slim to none. And my goal too is to make sure that whomever we place is not a flight risk, doesn't leave. So transparency is really kind of at the core on what we bring to the table. And it's funny though, because I feel like I'm somewhat on an island as it pertains to the honesty and the transparency in this field. Because most of the time, people in my situation are simply chasing the dollars and not looking, looking for one-offs, not looking for long-term relationships. And I've, not to toot my own horn, but I've gotten compliments about how open and honest we are. And people really appreciate that. Not only from people that are in my position, but also the company. Having sitting down with the executive and literally learning, hey, here's where we're good, here's where we're okay, and here's where we're deficient. Being able to kind of highlight the areas in which you're good as well as maybe kind of under par, or not under par, but deficient, super, super important for attracting strong candidates.
Here's a question, and it may seem a little blunt, but I'm going to ask it anyway. What are your thoughts about technology and the perception of recruiters being extremely lazy?
I feel that like a lot of them are lazy. There's also the strong ones out there are the ones that are out there hustling and making money, that are open, that are honest, that are transparent. I feel like a lot of folks also hide behind technology. So for instance, you have aggregators like LinkedIn, Indeed, these different job boards that essentially recruiters can use. They can get a whole net full of 500 applicants. They also have AI that screens the applicants. And so, you know, hell, you're probably losing 10% of the good ones just through the screening process of the AI. So I'm not a huge proponent of taking out the human as it pertains to the recruiting. And I feel like software has led to some very, very lazy practices, like just simply creating a job description, putting it out there on the internet and waiting for people to come to you. Our approach is completely different from that. We don't do any job ads. We do have a job board, but it's closed, completely closed. And all the jobs are vetted by us and they're real, which is a very, very important distinction. But we also too, everything we do is direct touch. And this can go out to some best practices as well for budding recruiters or companies that are looking to maybe create a better footprint from a recruiting perspective. But we go look for passive candidates, people that aren't necessarily out there, really active, really looking. We look for the folks that are happy with their job, but ultimately open perhaps to looking for a better situation for themselves. And so we go out and we create a value statement and actually go out and touch these individuals, have conversations with them. And honestly, Ben, I generally have 2 to 3 conversations with each candidate that's a viable candidate. So that really gets me in the driver's seat from having a good understanding as to, from a soft skill perspective, are they getting a good cultural fit and do they have the right background? A lot of work.
It is a lot of work. I mean, it's enormous amount of work to do it right, as most jobs are. There's a lot of people out there that go through the motions, doesn't matter what you do. And there's a few people out there that actually take the time to do it right. And it comes down to strategy. It comes down to being deliberate. And it comes down to a lot of communication. So my question is, and this is going out to candidates and also recruiters, are the best jobs and the real jobs and the ones that are the most viable jobs on these big recruiting boards, or are they still truly done because somebody knows somebody and the relationships are formed and somebody didn't know that somebody was looking for a job, but the conversation happened?
Great question. So obviously I'm a little biased here. So let me kind of put that out there. But I'm a big believer that the best jobs are ones that maybe are not publicized, are not pushed out. Maybe a recruiter such as myself is working them, or you find it simply from word of mouth or utilizing your network. So what I generally tell people, I'm like, hey, listen, if job boards aren't working for you and I'm connected to somebody that's within this company, that's the perfect role, feel free to reach out to me and I'm more than happy to try to make a connection. Now that of course assumes they're a good candidate, right?
Of course.
But I'm still a big believer that if they're not leveraging somebody like myself, then they need to be out leveraging their network and going out there, and that's going to be the best way to find jobs. So 100%, I am not a huge believer in these big job boards. I would spend my time networking. And that brings me to another point, is that most folks start networking when they don't have a job or they're desperate to leave their job. And that in itself too is a missed opportunity for these individuals. You should always be leveraging your network, always reaching out to people. You never know what's going to come your way just by reaching out and touching somebody every 3, 6, 9 months.
Perfect. We're getting down to the short strokes of this, but I wanted to ask you, what's the one piece of advice that you would give people about recruiting that they never would have thought of themselves?
So hopefully they thought about this, but really it's your story, right? Like, what's your company's story? What's the value proposition? I mean, recruiting is sales 101, right? And now we're too kind of in this environment where it used to be companies are out looking for candidates and they're screening them because they know they want to work for them. But the millennials have really kind of shifted the landscape. And now we're in a position where not only are companies vetting people, but people should be vetting the companies. So companies need to put themselves in a position where they really have a succinct message. They know their value proposition and they know why people come and why people stay. And that's ultimately what candidates really care about. On the other side of the house, when you're talking about candidates, and I give coaching this generally to the more junior folks, but still kind of the executive side of the house, is that companies vetting you, but you also need to do your due diligence. Look about on Glassdoor. talk to some people that actually know the leadership team. You need to go out and vet them, because why would you spend time and get ramped up over 3, 6, 9 months just to leave later? So do due diligence, people. It's not rocket science. Get out there, do your research, and ultimately vet the company as hard as they're vetting you.
Well, you're definitely speaking my story when it comes to storytelling. I mean, that's my raison d'etre. That's the stuff that I love to do, is helping clients with their messaging and their storytelling, and help them tell their story in an effective way. So what's the best way for people to get in touch with you, Bo?
Sure. So via LinkedIn, Bo Billington, BEAUBILLINGTON. Website is thefreeagent.com, thefreeagent.com. And I also have a podcast at findingthatnextgear.com. So a few different areas there. An email is bo@thefreeagent.com. Super simple.
And we'll make sure all that's available within the show notes. First of all, shout out to Raul Ochoa for putting us together. It was awesome for him to put us together. But I got one last question that I ask everybody before I let them out the door.
Let's go.
And that question is, when you leave a meeting and you get in your car and you drive away, what's the one thing you want people to think about when you're not in the room?
For me, I always send a thank you note after a meeting, period. And so the one thing I want them to think about is that I'm honest, I'm open, and I'm highly communicative.
You know what? It's all about building relationships. It's all about trust. And it's all about making sure people know that you have their best interests at heart.
100%.
Bo, you have been an incredible guest. Thank you for your wisdom. And thank you for being on the show.
Hey, Ben, it's been a real pleasure. Thanks so much for having me on. Great discussion. Great host. It's been awesome. Thank you.
This has been the Your Living Brand Live Show. I want to thank you for tuning in today. If you enjoyed this episode, please subscribe to the show at yourlivingbrand.live. And share your favorite episodes with colleagues and friends. At Your Brand Marketing, we help companies engage, retain, and grow their most valuable assets, their employees. If you're tired of losing great staff and want to retain your best employees, build brand champions and leaders at any level. Contact us for a 30-minute consultation at yourbrandmarketing.com. That's www.yourbrandmarketing.com. Thank you again for listening and sharing. Tune in next week when we ask another guest, what's your story?